Hello, everybody. So the topic of this conference call at this point is how to be an effective connector. So to begin the call, let's define what is really a connector. And when we think about Kiruv, there's this idea of a professional Makariv. You know, I'm not a professional Makariv. People say, I'm not comfortable, I don't know about Kiruv. So we have to kind of take that away. When we think about a Makariv, we imagine someone who's like this expert. He knows how to take a non-from person, and somehow they turn them around and they make them religious. They're going to say the right thing. They're going to do the right thing. They know just how to explain Havdalah, and then that's it. The person's going to be religious. You know, it's much like that story that's well known at this point about Rav Noach Weinberg, Shavu Refuah Shleima. He went, but when he was looking to start Eshet Torah, so he went to get a bracha from some of the Gedolim, and he went to Rav Shach, and he said to him, you know, I want to start a Kiruv Yeshiva. So Rav Shach says to him, you know, what's this, a Kiruv Yeshiva? You know, what are you going to do over there? You're going to have non-from people? What are they going to do all day? So Rav Noach says, no, what's going to happen? They're going to come, they're going to learn about Yiddishkeit, and then they're going to get more into Yiddishkeit, and then they can go on and be from Yiddin. So he says, Rav Shach says to him, oh, very good. So you want to make a factory. You want to bring them in, and you'll fix them up, and you'll ship them out. He says, very good. Okay, you have my bracha. So, okay, 30 years later, Baruch Hashem, Kiruv is much more well-known. We're all familiar with the concept of Kiruv yeshivas, of Kiruv organizations. And really, we have a different problem. We have a problem because even though we see Balei Tshuva all over the place, where some people have said that in every community, every frum community, from Flatbush to Muncie to Blakewood, to wherever you go, it's like either the person next to you is a Baal Tshuva or they're the child of a Baal Tshuva. So we see them all over the place. The thing that we have to think about is, but how did that happen? How can I be part of the process of helping them to become a Baal Tshuva? Oh, that I don't know. Yeah, Kiruv, a very good thing. We've seen the movies inspired, but how can I be part of that process if I'm not a Kiruv professional? So that's really the topic of this conversation, is what is really a Kiruv professional? A Kiruv professional is really an effective connector. So we talk about being a connector. Right now I run Eshet Torah's New York campus department. So we have a whole bunch of campus rabbis and people who work on campus with the students. Well, what does a rabbi do on campus? A rabbi essentially is going to meet students, develop a relationship with them, and then connect them to phenomenal resources. And that's really what Kiruv is about. To a degree, what we've done in our misnomer about this professional Makariv, we've almost taken away the notion of Bechira Chofshis, of free will, from the non-from person. Somehow we have this notion that a Kiruv professional knows how to take away their Bechira, so now they're not going to choose. They're just going to go ahead and follow blindly. Yes, sir, you say, go ahead, Rabbi, I'm going with you. When in reality, of course that can't be true. It always has to be the choice of the non-from person to decide to get involved in Yiddishkeit, to decide to keep Shabbos, to decide to learn more. What our role as professional Makarvim, and I challenge you to understand that really every one of us is and can be a professional Makariv, it's just a function of how much time we're going to spend on it, if we can be an effective connector. So let's talk about what it means to be an effective connector. There are six stages, essentially, where you could find a non-religious person. The first stage is where you don't know them at all. It's what we call the meet stage, right? At this point, you are just meeting them for the first time. And you know, we have to realize when we're dealing with people around us that we have to keep our eyes and ears open at all times. Some people, the most unsuspecting people, may just be Jewish right under our noses. My father has a whole bunch of phenomenal Kiruv experiences, even though he himself has always said, not only is he not a Kiruv professional, he would never want to be a Kiruv professional. And it's really because of this whole reason that he can't imagine the idea of, I'm going to go and convince somebody else how they should do. What does it mean? So sure enough, my father's in the elevator going down from his office in Midtown Manhattan. And on the way down, he's with a fellow from his office who happens to be a black fellow. He's a good-looking, tall, young man. And my father says to him, this is before, actually, President-elect Obama had already won the election. He says to him, you know, you really remind me of Obama. So this fellow turns to my father and he says, you should know, I have more in common with your heritage than with Obama's. So my father says, well, that's very interesting. What do you mean? And this is all happening in the elevator. So he says, well, you know, my grandmother, her name is Goldie Katz. So my father, you know, clearly flabbergasted, thinking, wow, this guy's been working with me for a whole while already. I see him every day. In my wildest dreams did I never think that this guy is actually Jewish. He says, you know, my father's answer says, you know, just by chance, Goldie Katz, does she happen to be your father's mother or your mother's mother? And he says, well, she happens to be my mother's mother. At this point, you know, my father's thinking, oh, my gosh, I can't believe it. So my father says to me, you know that means that you're like totally, according to everybody, I mean, all Jews across the world would agree, you are totally Jewish. He says, yeah, you know, some people would say that. And sure enough, my father went on to have a conversation with him about Rosh Hashanah and invited him for Rosh Hashanah. And he went back and he asked his grandmother, Goldie Katz, and she said, yeah, you should go. And the next thing you know, this fellow from my father's office, whose name is Dwayne Powell, a black fellow from my father's office that he never, ever would have thought, is a Jew standing right under his nose. Much like what Rebecca was talking about, how many Jews have assimilated into the society. They're all around us. Whether Dwayne would have had aspirations for gefilte fish or not, I don't know. But the idea is that we really have to keep our eyes and ears open. The first thing is in meeting. How can we meet people? So there's approaching people. You can definitely approach random people on the street, go over to a person on a bus, see some sort of a Jewish identification, or just strike up conversation. Although, granted, that's for certain personality types. Some people are going to be more comfortable with that than others. But certainly, to respond to being bageled. Right, Rabbi Becker actually, I think, has coined this phrase of being bageled, where somebody is self-identifying as a Jew. Just tonight, my wife was telling me that a friend of ours from around the corner was sitting, and she was getting her nails done. Of all places, I don't think she went to get her nails done to do Kiruv, but she's sitting there getting her nails done, and right next to her, there's a woman who's also getting her nails done. And as this neighbor of ours is sitting there getting her nails done, she hears this woman sitting next to her say, yeah, and I got to pick up some presents for Hanukkah. That's being bageled. Now, did this woman necessarily identify so that my neighbor would hear her and then do something about it? Probably not. But certainly now that my neighbor has become involved with Project Inspire and she's been involved with an e-group for a few months already, and she's very sensitive to all these things going on around her. She hears Hanukkah presents, ding, ding, ding. Okay, what am I going to do? So the first thing is, be sensitive to the people around you. Sure enough, this neighbor around the corner, she did the next step. Right? The next step beyond meet is really to start developing a relationship. Now, that can't happen unless when you meet the person, you do the most important thing, which is to get the person's contact information. Right? Now, we can't underestimate the value of just meeting a Jew, making a positive impression, a Kiddush Hashem. There's wall cam cards. You can give a card that has the website for the video camera that you can see, the kotel. It's a beautiful thing. And there's a whole idea that you can just tell them you can go to the kotel tonight. That's wonderful. But certainly the next level is where you go ahead and you say, you know what, why don't we get together sometime for a cup of coffee? Or would it be okay if I take your number? I know some great Jewish resources. Sure enough, this neighbor around the corner, after a few minutes of chit-chat about Hanukkah and the kids and presents and whatever it be, said to a woman, would it be okay if I took your phone number? I know a lady in the community, and she connects different women, and they study together on the phone, one-on-one on the phone, about any topic that's interesting to them. And she said, yeah, that would actually be very nice. And sure enough, she got her phone number, and now she's going to be in touch with her. The next stage, this is stage number two now, of being an effective connector is developing a relationship. Developing a relationship is getting anything from a cup of coffee to having the person over for a barbecue, inviting them for a Shabbos meal, giving them a call just to say hello. Nowadays it's even easier. You can just IM them. You can send them an email. There's so many easy things to do. That nothing heavy religious, just developing enough of a relationship. The idea being that upon the basis of a relationship, a person who doesn't know you from Adam is going to be willing, is going to be open to the idea of saying, you know what, you're a nice person. You seem to care about me. You seem to be a decent friend. You know, if you suggest that I should go listen to a class, go online to a website, whatever it be, they're going to be much more receptive. Granted, they may be receptive just from an initial meeting, but they will be more receptive based on a strong relationship that you've developed over a few interactions. So 2-3 Shabbos meals or coffee get-togethers or even just a few phone calls and emails, it's amazing how quickly people connect so strongly through these types of reach-outs. We had a fellow, some of the times I've spoken for Project Inspire, I've talked about my phone guy. So when we first moved into our house, the guy who came to hook up our Verizon phone turned out to be a Jewish young man, a very nice guy. And Eric Ross, this young guy works for Verizon, you know, he came over to our house for Shabbos. And while we were talking, you know, over the Shabbos meal, we were talking about those great corkscrews, the one that, you know, it's like the rabbit. You know, you push it down and you pull it up and boom, the whole thing comes out 1, 2, 3. And we just mentioned it nonchalantly in the course of the meal. Next thing we know, we get in the mail a whole package, a box. And Eric had bought us this beautiful, it comes in a beautiful box with all the different parts to it. It was such an amazing thing. And it showed that so quickly, after just a few interactions, Eric had already become very close. We were very comfortable with each other. We developed a relationship. So that's number two. Again, number one, meet people all over the place. There are people who are waiting for us to just say hello, to respond to their bingling, to approach them on the bus, wherever it may be. Number two is to develop the relationship. Take the time to do small interactions, the small invites, spend a small amount of time, and take the initiative to develop a relationship with somebody. Number three is really what's called a transformational experience. So in other words, if you have a relationship with somebody who is not religious, and you're exposing them to different elements of Orthodox Judaism. So you're showing them what a Shabbos meal is like, and you're talking to them about different concepts. You may learn something with them. Very light, very nice, very good. At some point, what can catapult that whole experience is what we call a transformational experience. Now, for college-age kids, something like this, they're relatively, we hope they'll continue, to be a dime a dozen. There are tons of these types of trips, getaways. We're going this winter break to Costa Rica. We're going to Prague and Israel. There's trips all over the place for college-age students. But very often, the interactions that we have with people that we meet, whether it be in the office or relatives or whatever it is with people who are a bit older. And for that, the most effective transformational experience that really exists right here in our own local areas is a Gateways Shabbaton retreat. These experiences where a family goes for a whole Shabbos, and they learn about Judaism. They spend a whole Shabbos with Rabbi Becher and Rabbi Rieti, and they get blown away by the Jewish content, but maybe more so by the beautiful people. They see what a beautiful community we have of these rabbis who are totally different than the rabbi concept they had. They see what a beautiful Shabbos is about, the ruach of the Shabbos, the spirit and the singing and the dancing. And what's interesting is that Gateways continuously says that one of the most transformational parts of the weekend is the babysitting. That simply having their children interacting with young, frum girls who are going to take care of the children with such sweetness, and they see beautiful teenage girls that are acting this way. They say, my gosh, this is amazing. The children are changed. The parents are changed. It's really an incredible experience. So the next stage, after you've developed some basis of a relationship, and again, many of you may be interacting with people at work all the time, and you have a relationship with the person. You talk to them every day. Now you're saying, great, okay, fine. We always talk about how I can initially go over to somebody. I've gotten past that. How I can develop a relationship. I got past that. And then the big question is, so now what? So the next step is really this type of a transformational experience that will move the person, that will open them up to concepts that they never would have considered otherwise, something that's very hard for us to be able to provide for them. What happens after the transformational experience, which is, again, stage three, we're now going into stage four, the transition stage. Transition is what happens after this type of transformational experience. When we have to realize that when a person goes through this type of an experience, there's a lot of blocks, issues, concerns, fears that are going on in a person's mind. I had a student who came with us on one of these away trips. And at the end of one of the days on the trip, we had a discovery full-day seminar, and it was like three-quarters of the way through the trip. And at the end of the day, he turned to me and says, Rabbi, do you have any idea what this is going to do to my life? And I paused, and I thought, my gosh, you know, this guy is sitting here the whole day, and he's thinking, wow, the rabbi's really right. It's all true. But do you know what that means to my parents, to my friends, to my relatives, to my girlfriend who's not Jewish? Like, what do you want from me? Right? So there's such huge blocks that are going on that make it very difficult for them to be mekabel the very concepts that they're hearing that they really like, they find to be true. I compare this very often to the Ma'amad Har Sinai experience. Right? We have people that are coming in. They're seeing that the whole thing is true. There's no question. But their question is really, what am I going to do now? So because they have such a block to it, what they're going to say is, either it can't be true, or I'm going to ignore the fact that it's true, whatever it is. But soon after, so one of these transformational types of experiences, very often people will go like Chita Eagle style. They're going to rebel the other way. They say, get me out of here. I can't deal with this. It's too much. So what's very important at that stage is to make sure that the person is transitioning, that they have peers, that they have a community, that they're involved in regular learning, that they go to social types of events and interactions where they can see that there are other people just like them. Our community today has so many Baal Tshuva, so many people who can talk to them about the experiences that they're going through. If you're a Baal Tshuva yourself, so much that you can share with them about your experience. If you have friends that are Baal Tshuva, again, connecting them to those people, seeing a community that's very warm, that's welcoming, that's beautiful for them, for their children. It's such an amazing opportunity, but at the same time, such a critical thing to make sure that it's not like, wow, I got them to go to the Gateway Seminar, and now, you know, okay, I'm done. No. At that point, it's really what we call transition. We have to be able to transition them into a more normative type of from community. After transition, what's very important, although very often difficult, is what's called the yeshiva experience. Really, at that point, they really need is education. So again, today, there's so many tools available. Esh HaTorah started a new website called Pathways. You can find it on esh.com, which is really for the Baal Tshuva, the person who's ready to become from, and now they want to learn more. They want to learn about brachos, they want to learn about halacha. They have like videos about how to make havdalah, and they show you literally how to hold it and what to say and the different customs and whatever it is. And beautiful, thank God there's so many resources available. But at this point, the person really just needs to learn. They need to learn how to read. They need to learn. They're going to, if you think about the foresight about what the different issues that are going to come up with their children going to yeshiva, and now they're going to help their kids, Mitzvah Shem, with studying for tests. If they themselves can't read Hebrew, they're going to feel very, very much at a disadvantage, very down on themselves, very uncomfortable in the whole from community. So we have to foresee that as a block. So again, the next step is really education. So where possible, if they can take off time and spend some significant time in a yeshiva environment, that's ideal. Again, even nowadays, in, let's say, Psaic as an example, although this exists in many places, there are shuls that actually call themselves a yeshiva. There's a shul in Psaic, actually next door to Rabbi Becher's house, that calls itself a yeshiva, and in truth, there are many people around the community who became from, and their sole yeshiva experience has been in that shul while they're working full-time. They've been able to get a yeshiva experience where they learn Gemara, and they learn how to read, and they learn skills, and it's really a beautiful program that they have available to people who are new Baal Tshuva who want to learn skills, like being in a yeshiva, but can't take off the time. And the final thing is really to be conscious and cognizant of integration. As we can't forget about the fact that, again, as we alluded to earlier, of the issues that are going to come up with their children, of if a person's not married, the shidduchim challenges of a Baal Tshuva. We know so all too well the shidduchim challenges that exist in the frum community. All the more so is exasperated by the Baal Tshuva who have a challenge of dealing with finding a proper shidduch. And it's really our responsibility to see that all the way through. So let's really review. We have six stages that we're talking about here. Number one is just to meet people. Find different opportunities around you. See it. Be cognizant of it in your office, in the nail salon, in the pizza shop, on the bus, whatever it be. Finding opportunities to be cognizant where you can hear people who are either reaching out to you or you feel comfortable reaching out to them. The next thing is to develop a relationship. The basis of that relationship is going to be such that they will be open and interested to hear what you have to offer them, whether it be through you yourself or through offering them some new type of transformational experience. Just to give you a concept on developing a relationship, I had a student when I was a campus rabbi in UCLA whom I met with every single week. This guy, Jeff Steinberg, phenomenal guy. Every single week we got together. He's a viola player. He's a professional viola player such that when the President of the United States came to Los Angeles, they asked Jeff to play the viola for him. Really a talented guy. And every time we get together, we talk about music and atonal music and regular music, and I had a real hard time trying to understand all this stuff, but we had a really great relationship. And every single week, Jeff and I would get together, and we'd talk about all different things about life. We had a really great relationship, and at the end of every single session, I would say to Jeff, "Hey, Jeff, why don't you come over for Shabbos?" And at the end of every single session, Jeff would say, "No, thanks, Rabbi, not interested." And this went on for an entire year. And at the end of the year, I was like going out of my box. I couldn't imagine, like, what am I supposed to do with this guy at this point? How can I be an effective connector? He's not responding to anything. He won't come for Shabbos. So I said to Jeff, I said, "You know, Jeff, we're going to Israel this summer on a whim. I know you won't come for Shabbos, but, you know, interested in going to Israel?" And he said, "Yeah, I am." Sure enough, Jeff went to Israel. He went back on a second trip to Or Sameach HaMantzi. He then went off to Eretz Yisrael for a longer period of time. Now Jeff is from, and his sister is from. The whole thing, it's an amazing thing what we don't realize, the power of a relationship. But we don't know exactly when that's going to take hold, when that's going to have the impact that the person is going to be interested, and on the flip side, when we're going to offer them the thing that they're truly looking for. After Jeff was properly from and he came back to my house, he finally came for Shabbos. I said, "Jeff, really tell me, why didn't you come for Shabbos?" And he says, "Honestly, I just didn't want to." You know, Jeff is a guy who practiced viola for 6 hours a day in a room, like with basically no windows. He would just sit there and practice all day. And he said, like, at the end of the week, like, I just wasn't really interested in going to a Shabbat meal. So we have to see the value of the developing relationship, and then again, we have to connect them to the next type of experience. So after developing relationship, we meet them, we develop a relationship, we try and connect them into a transformational experience, transition them into a healthy from type of lifestyle, get them to some level of education with yeshiva, and finally integrate them into the from community properly. Those are the 6 basic steps of being an effective connector. So when we meet people, at any stage that we meet them, wherever they're up to, or whatever our relationship is with them, we should be thinking, how can I effectively connect them to the resource that I have been gifted to have access to? Because in truth, we are not taking away their bechira chavshis chas v'shalom, we are not taking away their free will. What we are doing is using the gift that we were given of access to the from community, of access to Yiddishkeit, of access to Shabbos and Torah and learning that we have, that for whatever reason, this Yid has made it through 3,000 years of Jewish history, and right now is at a critical point of either they're going to assimilate into the oblivion of the general community, or they're going to reconnect. And what that's really up to is us, as the firm community, is to respond to their assimilation and see when they are bageling us or when they are talking to us in our office, to take the extra time and develop that relationship, to find the good resource, the website or the question or the rabbi or the program or whatever it be that's going to speak to them so that they can utilize their free will to choose to get involved in Yiddishkeit the same way that we have been given the opportunity to get involved in our own Yiddishkeit. I'll finish with one amazing Abarbanel I heard from Rabbi Tauber. Rabbi Tauber shared an Abarbanel. Keep in mind, the Abarbanel was written, he said, about 500 years ago, before the whole Reform and Conservative movement were even in light, didn't even begin. And the Abarbanel says, on the pasuk of Ashevosa Levecha V'shavta Ad Hashem Elokecha, he says, it's a double lashon. Why? Because at the end of days, he says, the vast majority of the Jewish people are going to be off the derech. Most people are not going to be religious. How the Abarbanel knew this, we don't know. But he says most people are going to be not religious. And an amazing thing is going to happen. First, the from people who are left are going to teach the non-from people how to be Jewish. They're going to show them, this is how you shake a lulav, this is how you put on tefillin, this is how you make kiddush, this is how you make abdullah, how to be Jewish. That's what the firm community is going to do. And after that, the new Baalei Tshuva are going to teach the firm community why to be Jewish. They're going to give back so much more to us. And we always have to keep in mind that by the investment that we take of just a little bit of a connection, of showing them, let me connect you to this, let me show you where you can learn how to say Kiddush, let me show you where you can find out about evidence of God at a gateway seminar, let me show you about Shabbos in the community and introduce you to a beautiful Hanukkah party that we're having at our house this week. Why not? Come on over. All of those things that we have the opportunity to connect them to, they're going to give back so much more to us, to re-give us the why of being Jewish, the warmth, the flavor, the excitement that we all could benefit from more of. We hope that we'll be able to. I'll now take questions if anybody has. Thank you all so much.